The views expressed in this interview are those of the individuals and do not reflect the official policy or position of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, or the Naval Postgraduate School. Welcome to the Trident Room, brewer of stout conversation, unfiltered and on tap.
All right, y'all. Hey, welcome back. This is Anthony.
And Alora.
Welcome back to the Trident Room Unfiltered podcast. And today, again, is Lena Free Wednesday. And guess what else there, Alora?
A sad face emoji because we miss her.
Hashtag. That's right. It's trending. And we're also joined by two new guests. You guys mind introducing yourselves?
Hey, how's it going? I'm Lieutenant Michael Harper.
All right.
Hey, everyone. Lieutenant Mac Womack.
All right.
Mac Womack. That's a great name.
Is that real?
Thanks. Got to credit my parents for that one.
Shout out,
Mackie Womack.
Mackie. That's a lot of alliteration there. I like that. Yeah. You guys mind telling us a little bit about yourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a Navy Surface Warfare Officer. I'm actually one of the first, and so is Mac. We are actually part of the new program in the Navy called the Navy TCT, Tailored Career Transition to FAO program, we're going to come back and do
What's a FAO? Explain
a foreign area officer. Awesome. So basically the two of us, once we're both students here, but once we finish our time here at MPS, we will go back to the fleet, serve another tour as department heads, and then after that, we'll go on to our respective areas of operation as foreign area officers.
Awesome.
I'll go to Southcom, and Mac will go to Indo-Paycom, where we will serve the Navy as strategic operators.
Awesome.
That's so cool.
And I see you're wearing your Defense Language Institute swag there. So yep. So you went to school prior to coming here?
So I'm a prior enlisted sailor.
Cool.
I joined the Navy in 2014,
Wow.
And when I first signed up, I signed up as a CTI, as a Navy linguist, came here to Monterey as a Spanish linguist, spent my time here, and then went off, did my time as an enlisted sailor, commissioned as a service warfare officer, I knew that Monterey, California is a promised land. I did everything I could to get back to here, to include applying to become a foreign area officer, coming back to MPS for graduate school.
Fantastico. Dios mío. Yeah, so you mentioned a few different acronyms, just for some of our guests who are other services don't know. So CTI, you mind explaining what that is again?
So it's a cryptologic technician interpretive, a fancy way of saying Navy linguist. But essentially, we support our signals intelligence, our national side intelligence partners.
Cool.
But the reality is we are people in uniform, in the Navy uniform, cheap labor for the DOD, but we get to basically each have an area of expertise as a linguist and an intelligence analyst and supporting the greater forces.
Yeah. Where'd you serve as a SWO at?
So as a SWO, Service Warfare Officer, I served both my division officer tours in San Diego. I was very fortunate.
Wow,
I served on an amphibious platform for 3 years, deploying to the CENTCOM AOR, but taking on Marines, loved it, loved everything about it.
Ate all your food, worked out and all that?
Absolutely. And then my second tour was on a littoral combat ship in San Diego, training other platforms to deploy to the Westpac.
Yeah, super cool. How about yourself, Mac? Tell us about yourself, man.
Yeah, so thank you, Mike, for covering a lot of that introduction. But I'm also a Surface Warfare Officer.
Awesome.
I went to Officer Candidate School, commissioned through there. Both my division officer tours were in Japan. So.
Oh, me too, man.
Oh,
yeah, that's
Japan.
Awesome.
Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
First one was, though. Yeah, awesome. Were you in Sas Vegas or were you you're in Yokosuka? Where were you at?
So I was in both.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
So first tour was in Yokosuka. I was on USS Shiloh out there. Served as the first lieutenant. Absolute blast. Japan is awesome.
Japan is awesome, man.
Dude, your first lieutenant? Oh, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I had the best senior chief bosun mate in the world.
Yeah,
he really taught me how to be a great officer, how to treat sailors.
Yeah.
What a great time. Second tour was in Sas Vegas.
And for our listeners, why do they call it Sas Vegas? This is Sasebo, by the way, Sasebo. But why do they call it Sas Vegas?
So they call it Sas Vegas because right outside of base, you have what most sailors refer to as Sailor Town. A lot of opportunities for sailors to have a really good time out there.
For better or for worse.
Yeah. Maybe get in trouble, maybe have fun.
Learning experiences is what I'm hearing.
I think there's a lot of lessons learned that come out of that to really help build your
future spouses, future divorces. You know, it's fun. It's all fun.
Which one of those did you end up with?
I met my wife there, and we're still together.
Yay!
Hooray! I love that.
So we are.
Is there a Japanese Elvis that did your wedding?
Wait,
you could do that?
not a Japanese Elvis, but we did have multiple weddings.
Of course.
Was one of them with Elvis?
I wish it was, but it wasn't. Although plenty of opportunity for that in Sas Vegas. No, but we did the old wedding in Sasebo, got married at Town Hall, came back to America.
So you had to get your certificate translated to English.
We did.
Right? Yeah.
We did. Went through that whole process. Came back to America. Had a wedding with my my New Jersey family.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, cool.
And then finally,
where's the accent?
You know what? Jersey folks get that a lot.
Another drink here. Yeah. It's gonna come out.
but you know, we had a ball.
There it is.
That's awesome.
And what are you studying, or what's your region of expertise for the FAYO program?
So surprisingly, Indo-PACOM.
Oh, nice, man.
You mentioned that.
So what language are you going to be focusing on for Indo-PACOM?
So I don't know the language yet.
Oh, okay.
But it will probably and most likely be one of the regions that they offer there.
Yeah.
So anywhere from Korean to Japanese to could be a simplified Chinese language. Or
any language you're hoping for?
I'd love question, yeah. Japanese.
How surprising. Yeah.
But after those tours, my wife and I, we went to, a very different location, Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, man. I love Jacksonville, man. Heck yeah.
Had a complete blast there. Yeah. My wife is a giant Jaguars fan.
Yeah. It's a great stadium. Good people too.
What sports awesome stadium. Ball kind of activity is that one? Jaguars?
Football.
Football.
Great,
okay.
Great American football.
That's
go
it.
Football.
That's it.
Go sports.
Go sports. Yeah. I have a family who retired there. Both my aunt and uncle were in the Navy, and they live in Jacksonville. And I had a sister who went to St. Augustine. So I just love that area. It's a beautiful area. Great people. I just always had a great time in Florida whenever I'm out there.
It's always a good time.
So how this works with us is we're going to all put our fingers in this app that I have. It's going to choose a random first player, which will be a topic of your choice as long as it abides by our rules that we previously discussed. Is everyone ready?
Yep. Ready.
Okay. You want to hold the phone?
Yeah. All doing it.
Yep, sticker.
That's it.
Hold it down until it makes a color, and then the selected color will be...
Oh,
wow. There we go.
I feel like that's...
That took all the pressure off of me. Took all the pressure off of me. Okay.
I should have not put my finger
on it. You can defer again.
Defer my topic.
I didn't hear that in the rules.
You ready for a topic?
Oh, are you a rule follower?
Only when it comes to me not having to do stuff.
Something that I'm curious about and have been for a while because I haven't had the chance to discuss it, but I want to know what your feelings are about... cursive, and if you agree or disagree that it should not be taught in schools anymore, because it's something.
What brings this out? This question particularly.
I'm sad that they don't teach cursive in schools anymore.
They don't?
No.
Oh.
They stopped teaching. Yes. Oh. They stopped teaching cursive in schools, and it hurts me because I love.
So this goes back. Maybe I am a rule follower because I am all for it.
Yeah.
My writing is atrocious. You'd think I'm a doctor by how I write on paper.
Yeah.
But I am all for it because I think that some kind of baseline of teaching the next generation of how to do things, rule-based.
Right.
They have something to fall back on down to the baseline, like where I live.
Right.
But at least, you know, shoot for the stars and fall high.
Yeah.
That's kind of my feeling. If you know, raise the bar as high as you can and let them fall from there.
You're saying that learning cursive gives like an early entrance into some sort of like rule-based order.
Do something challenging, do something hard, and if you don't end up doing it, I don't use cursive ever.
Okay, that's fair.
And I've worked with a few people who write beautifully, who write in cursive. I swear to goodness, they look like Lord of the Rings Elvish, how well they write. But the reality is, I could never aspire to that in a million years.
Mm.
But man, use that as like a, you know, try to get there.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, the next generation could try to get there. And if they end up writing like me, I'll take that as like a fallback.
So what are they learning instead then?
They just print.
Okay.
They learn print.
And then it's from print to typing immediately, I guess. Like
I think we're about 4 years away from the next generation learning ChatGPT and voice and text.
Yeah,
and that's about it.
To their mind, get rid of handwriting. Yeah. Everybody has like awful handwriting these days, and I feel like it's directly contributed to them stopping cursive.
Yeah, but where do you use handwriting in though?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I do think there's something special about cursive and the way that when you connect the letters, something I heard is that your brain has a greater ability to register what that word is. Mm-hmm. So once you connect everything, it almost like there's nodes in your brain that are then able to like recognize what you're writing a little better and recognize it. And that's something I learned when I was, you know, trying to learn languages back in school. They had us write in Italian from Jersey.
Yeah.
So when we took our language class.
Taught you Italian in school?
Yeah, back in New Jersey, we were a pretty predominantly Italian-American area.
They
had us write our Italian in cursive because when you're learning a new language and you're connecting the letters, it's easier to register. At least that's what we were taught. So I think there are some benefits that you know are worth exploring.
And maybe some prior language. There's beauty in language. Can I put you on blast?
Please.
Japanese has how many different types of written language? Two?
That's like a few.
Three.
Three?
Three,
yeah.
And kanji is the most complex of all of them, right? Yeah. And I have a friend who is having their second child very soon.
Mazel tov.
Who is excited about the naming convention of their child, how it can be written in kanji.
Oh, cool.
That is amazing.
That's a unique way of thinking about it, yeah.
And to sit there and listen to two people who love each other, so excited for their child to be named this way, but get to choose how beautifully it's written in kanji.
That's pretty fascinating.
There's something special about
that. That's very beautiful.
Yeah. And I think there's something that is lost for the next generation if we can't do that. Right. And I think that's something that I'd advocate for every day.
I absolutely agree, and I think that's really cool.
Let me play devil's advocate. Do you think there's anything that we could gain for not doing that? The reason I ask that is because I think there's been a lot more pushback. And there's a couple of different podcasts I listen to that this is like a focus of episode that we're losing something with ChatGPT or LLMs. But I guess to steel man it, maybe I'll start off like I counter that with that's allowing you to expand to other different things. For instance, I'm more of a technical guy. One of my undergrads was EE. I don't code in assembly or machine language. I use a higher level language.
Yeah.
And now I'm using LLMs to help me with like coding. So that's allowed me now to less focus on specific syntax and grammar of like some arbitrary language that's made up, to focus more on like the overall bigger picture of where I want to go with certain things. So can you think of like maybe a steel man of like why this would be a good thing perhaps?
So I can think of the positives. Mm. I think what I'd push back on is that's a benefit for you because you know the difference.
That's
and you
true.
Have that
that's
baseline
fair.
Foundation.
That's
right.
Fair.
I'm here at MPS to get a degree in national security affairs at Emphasis Latin America. Could I ChatGPT what the socioeconomic conditions of Chile are right now? Mm. Absolutely. But can I have the fundamental baseline conversation about why that's important? Have somebody face-to-face push back on me?
Yeah.
You need that baseline. And I think that my personal opinion of, you know, rules-based order or whatever have you, I think that we need that foundation to just kind of use as a baseline for life. And I think that should never be lost on us. And I think that's important going forward. You know, we as a university are struggling with that question of where we're going with, you know, generative AI and all those things, but we have that benefit of knowing the difference.
Do you think that maybe the people who predominantly, I'm thinking like medieval, like Europe, like Latin was the lingua franca, right? That was all they spoke. So I'm curious if maybe they had a certain similar sentiment where people moved away, like let's say Dante when he wrote Inferno. Now it's in more the vernacular. Like I'm curious if people had a similar argument, like they're not learning Latin, like, you know, that's, we should be learning a Latin, you know. So I'm not saying I disagree. I do think that there should be something there, and I think however atrocious my cursive was and is currently now, to your point, I think both of your points, I think there is something there that stirs the brain that we have with symbols, you know, with our logic, abstraction, all that can be combined in. Not just learning blocks of letters, but I think also the more, and perhaps artistic, right? Because, I mean, why does cursive exist? I'm not really sure, to be honest with you.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, right? You know, yeah, I don't know, yeah. But can you all think of maybe like a positive of not learning cursive? That's a tough one, perhaps.
I think it also comes down to, you know, when you talk about all this new technology that's out there, the language learning models, coding. I remember going through schools, and I think we all do this. We had to take keyboarding classes, and you know what had to be sacrificed to add the keyboarding class to the curriculum because you know keyboards weren't always around.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, if they're going to choose, hey, what are we sacrificing so that we could teach kid maybe or teach our young children some kind of early stage coding or something that may be more beneficial. You know, I've always heard, you know, perhaps like, hey, maybe we want to teach our kids more financial literacy at early stages, you know? So if you have to pick something as a sacrifice, as much as I think there are benefits to cursive. And I'm happy I'm not the one making these decisions on what to sacrifice.
That's very
but
true.
But it seems like low cursive may be a little low. Yeah,
I can get that. Yeah. What's interesting when you bring up kind of creativity in cursive is that when handwriting is analyzed, those who have very loopy, swooshy cursive, think of Walt Disney's signature, those are people that tend to be more creative on the creative side. So
you're saying that's like an early metric where maybe a teacher, parent, mentor can see something and be like, this person might lean a certain way and maybe we can adjust how we're teaching somebody from that.
That's fair.
Now I'm thinking about how bad my cursive is and what that says about my abilities in this world.
Yeah. Well, no, but truly, because although you might not be like a Walt Disney type of creative, whatever your handwriting says about you, it does speak about what you are, what your strengths are.
They're like the tea leaves to our souls.
Yeah.
Oh man.
The tea leaves
That's
to
scary.
Our souls.
That's scary.
Handwriting's cool.
I think it's amazing. It's not my forte and it never will be, but again, I support it.
What do you think could be the next cursive, I guess? Like what could be the next I guess we talked a little bit about it already, like it could be financial literacy or something, but
I like the coding.
I do think that
or some abstraction.
We talk
right?
about it's some elementary school, some board somewhere had to make a decision to sacrifice something in the curriculum to put keyboarding skills into our lesson planning growing up. And I really do think the next step is coding and what that will happen. I agree with you 100%. And I think that the reality is there are these tools that exist, not just LLMs that currently exist, but there were platforms 10 years ago that basically presented to the public coding that could all paradigms could understand. I can't remember the specific tool, but it was either Harvard or Princeton that created a tool where they basically made coding like a puzzle and very simple three or four sided puzzle pieces where you could put it together and understand the logic behind it, because this university understood there was a paradigm shift that was happening in the world and the next generation should understand this as a fundamental building block of language for us as humans.
Yeah, actually, I was going to bring that up. I forget what, I think it's Lego Next, right? They can be more visual for children.
Oh, there's all kinds of coding games and activities for kids.
It's more of like an abstraction in their mind to develop, like, I want to program this robot to go somewhere. It's the earlier ones are like less of like a syntax, but more of like pictures or concepts, you know, left, right, up, down, you know, temporal, things of that nature. And, you know, I think that's a skill set that actually, let me ask you this question, because I'm thinking about this sometimes when I talk to some other people who go to DLI, and like my Spanish is atrocious now, but I lived in Mexico for a little bit, and there was a switch where my dreams stopped being in English and then started becoming in Spanish. So my question is, for your conception of a language, is it language, then an internal mental model, and then another language, or is it like, does that make sense what I'm asking, I guess? Like, is it more conceptual in your head, but then it outputs as like a language?
You know, it's funny. You said it very simply, because I think as a prior linguist and as somebody who's lived in another country, there's a moment in your learning of another language. The first time you dream in another language is one of the most significant events that ever happens in your life. And I woke up crying. It was one of the most amazing things that ever happened in my life. And I will forever remember that day. Could I break that down into what specifically I was learning or not learning that made that difference? I don't know. But I will say that, you know, I went to DLI, I think, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And my language abilities have been a roller coaster, of proficiency. But
Of course.
The reality is I do remember when the actual switch happened to when I started becoming a good linguist. Wow. And it actually was not in the early years right after school.
Yeah,
it's when I had a passion for it, and when I actually the first time I came home, went, you know, turned on the TV and put something on in Spanish because I wanted to, and I wanted to learn about a vacation I was going on to Mexico or to Argentina, and the passion that existed in that moment, that's when things started really clicking. And I think that when it comes to coding and then the way the next generation thinks about languages and technology, I think there is genuine interest that we in our generation may not understand, but they do. But they genuinely do. It's part of their paradigm. And I think embracing that for their sake is what's going to make the difference. Yeah. It's not forcing it upon them like
cursive to a previous generation,
right.
but saying this is what you care about and let's explore that, I think making that sacrifice and adjust that will make the difference in the next generation.
You should learn this because it's something that I care about. You should learn this because it's something that you'll care about in the future.
Yeah.
Wow.
I will say, over the course of this conversation, my opinion on where cursive should be taught is like slowly starting to change.
I like that.
And now I'm more like, we have to look towards the next generation. You know, we have to figure out what we're changing cursive to.
I agree with everything that's been said, but what's 2 minutes a day to teach a letter is not going to hurt anything.
Well, the reason why
that's true.
I actually like this question a lot. I'm glad you actually brought this up too, because I was in Brazil, and that's one of the questions I asked some of the people who are tour guides, and quite a few people didn't speak English. I don't speak Brazilian Portuguese, so I was using the translation app almost the entire time. Right? I like ran out of my data. And so it was very difficult to communicate. And yeah, there's body language and all that.
Running out of data in Portugal.
Well, really, it's because it was like I'm in a movie, you know? Because I can't. That's what it was. Because I was using it so much to translate to people. Even the elites didn't really speak very much like English. And the onus would be on me to speak, you know, the language, you know.
Language is a bridge between cultures, but the reality is we sometimes don't appreciate the fact that when we're in somebody else's home turf. That it's on us to have the onus to bridge the gap to them.
Totally.
But when you make that effort, it matters.
Yeah, I will say they did appreciate me, you know, pulling this up and like, you know, I keep speaking to here, you know, trying to figure out exactly what they're saying. But it also made me think more about, we're talking about language, but also mathematics is a language. And I say that because sometimes when I'm doing research that's like math heavy, I dream in math. And it's like it's hard to explain. Like, it's very conceptual and like it's abstract.
I thought you were making a Mean Girls reference.
Is that really?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the main character's like.
I just know that on Wednesdays I wear pink.
Stop doing it. Not Anthony though, pink pants.
Yeah, this is actually supposed to be orange, but that's fine.
They look salmon.
All right, thank you. Yeah.
Somebody asked her why she liked math so much, and she's like, "It's because it's the same in all languages, or something."
That is true. There you go. Yeah. But sometimes I do dream in that, and it's like weird to kind of wake up, because when I wake up, now it's translated from math to like English.
Yeah.
You know, in my internal monologue.
Oh.
Does that make sense? Like.
Yeah.
Conceptually, when I'm dreaming, it's like. Yeah, I have these abstractions, but then when I wake up, I have to translate it out loud to something else.
The most beautiful thing I ever heard about math, I have a uncle who's a math professor.
Oh, wow.
And, you operate on two different languages. Yeah. We operate on two different levels, and I'm down here and he's up here. But the reality is, you know,
For our listeners, there was a huge gap between his hands.
it was quite significant.
It was not very close.
He was stretching his hand.
he was one of the early founders of a few programming languages.
Oh, wow.
And he taught math at the University of Edinburgh, and he talked to me about like higher programming languages and higher mathematics, and there's a certain point where you can't really write everything on paper and demonstrate it physically, and where you need to have faith. And when some of those higher concepts come into the abstract, and when you need to have faith in a process that things exist on a higher level, you really engage it differently. I never really understood that, and like breaking that down. But I just appreciate that every single day of like, you know, math is something that I may never grasp, but even the smartest people in the world may look at this and have faith that concepts exist and care about it enough to have faith that these things at higher levels exist.
That's true. I mean, you know, you owe me $20 is the same thing in every language, right? It's all math. Like, where's my $20 at? Laura, you owe me.
Do I?
I bought you drinks. That's right. I'm just kidding. Alumni Foundation is paying for this. So.
I was saying, don't tell me about conversions in Brazil.
Yeah, exactly right. Oh, man. So Japanese is something you really would like to learn, but is there another language that maybe as like a backup perhaps, or like this culture really fascinates me, Indo-PACOM? I know they're having some issues between, I want to say, Cambodia and Thailand right now. To date ourselves, I guess, in this particular podcast, but there's just something like within that region that you're like, man, I'm super fascinated by this, and I'd love to learn this language and or be stationed there.
That is a great question. So Japanese is absolutely up there as number one. However, I would honestly be super happy learning any of those languages, really any language. I think it's such an amazing skill to just add to your portfolio.
Yeah.
So I'm excited either way. As I mentioned earlier, when I was stationed in Japan, I had the privilege to go to many good ports throughout Asia.
Oh yeah.
And I just thought the cultures especially the food. Everything was amazing.
Mm-hmm. 7-Eleven.
Oh my goodness, 7-Eleven's there.
Japanese
7-Eleven. They're amazing.
Dope.
Absolutely amazing. So the answer is just yes. I want to go there. I want to learn a language. I'll be happy to live in any of those countries. I think every single one of them has something really, really cool to offer.
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually have a quick story about being stationed in Japan, and maybe you had something similar. There's not a lot of metal cutlery. You know, it's a lot of chopsticks, things like that. So something that I encountered where I was on a small boy. I was on the Mustang. We're out to sea all the time, but the times that we weren't, destroyer, like a smaller than like a large ship.
Okay.
Cruiser or destroyer.
Yeah, cruiser or destroyer.
I remember when I was out there, Mustang was like the workhorse.
Oh my gosh, we're out there all the damn time. Yeah. So the very brief moments we were in port fixing up something or whatever, right? One of the longest stretch was like, I don't know, 20 days or something. And then we're out to sea again. But like during that time period, I got back to the ship and I was using like a metal cutlery, right? Mm-hmm. And I could taste the metal that you get so used to, but because in Japan you use a lot more chopsticks and you know, whether it's disposable or not.
Okay.
But it's something that like really stuck with me, that I'm like, oh, this is like a metal fork. Did you have that experience at all? I'm just kind of curious. Or any like a similar experience?
The first time I was in Japan and saw somebody use larger chopsticks as a serving dish and to cut something up, it blew my mind. I respect it to this day, but to see somebody handle an entire portion or plate for like six people with larger chopsticks, I gained respect that day that I never imagined.
Maybe those were just tongs.
Maybe they were just tongs.
They're called tongs, man. It's hilarious.
I mean, I think there's something absolutely special about the way chopsticks are utilized.
Mm.
I mean, it is like, it's almost like an art. It's such a skill.
Yeah,
I agree.
And just like you said, even the way you eat the food, it's almost like, you know, you're placing the food in your mouth,
purposely.
You know, purposely.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, with a spoon, a fork, you're like, it feels like you're shoveling it in your face,
no.
You know?
Oh, that's a thing?
Or me with my hands, I'm like, you know, like, over here.
As an American eater, like, I can go through a plate of food much faster than my wife, who almost, like, you know, appreciates every bite with the chopsticks.
I like that.
And it's just such a difference.
Intentional eating.
I will say, circling back to cursive, never have experienced in my life when anything in the world, like I was in Japan, and everything is done with purpose. Not everything, 100%, but generally speaking, to meet people that care about things, that things are done ceremoniously, that things are done with a purpose,
a ritual.
Whether it comes to how you eat your food, to how you present yourself, to how you introduce yourself, it is one of the most beautiful cultures I've ever experienced in my life. But that right there is a connection. Chopsticks are cursive. People do it for a purpose and do it for a reason, and it matters to people around
the
world.
You slow down. You're not scratching through your homework. You're being intentional with your words.
Yeah, it feels very mindful. Almost like every cursive word you write, or every bite of food you eat, it feels purposeful. It feels mindful. It feels fulfilling.
And so that's what I'll say. I think every generation could benefit from something like that, of purposeful, mindful actions to care about the things you're doing, the things around you, and the people that are around you. And I think that is just like why Japan matters, why I care about Japan, and why I love Japan in a nutshell right there. Like the most amazing culture I've ever experienced in my life. Yeah,
that's
awesome.
I
think that's a great way to end our episode.
Yeah,
you brought everything.
Yeah,
tied everything together.
Came full circle,
right?
That's it. Yeah, wrapped in a bow. Yeah, so let us know if you're team cursive. Or, you know,
I think we're all team cursive. We just have a more open mind.
Mm-hmm. Full-time supporter, 100% not contributor.
Yeah.
All right.
So
with that, let's cheers away.
Hey,
thanks,
cheers,
y'all.
Cheers.
Thanks
so much for
cheers. Yeah, thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
And that's it. We hope you enjoyed this episode and let us know what you think about cursive.
Any of the topics you think you're interested in, or please stop by and let us know. And till next time.
Yeah, contribute topics so I don't make them talk about cursive for 30 minutes.
Thanks for joining us in the Trident Room. For more information about today's guests and topics, please visit the show notes online at nps.edu/Trident Room Podcast. The Trident Room Podcast has been brought to you by the Naval Postgraduate School Alumni Association and Foundation. For questions, comments, and suggestions, please email us at Trident Room Podcast Host @nps.edu.